The edifice resembled a stone menhir Vulcan had seen worshipped by debased and primitive cultures. Such backward religions were beyond compliance, and the salamanders had burned entire worlds corrupted by graven beliefs. Here, on 1544, it represented a nexus of the enemy's power, but would be torn down just the same. Something about its presence unsettled the Farians, who were lashed into obedience by the Discipline Masters and driven on into the cracking guns of the Eldar. On the orders of the Primarch, the Legion had burned the jungle all the way to the psychic node. Like wildlife facing a natural forest fire, the Eldar and their beasts had fled before the blaze. Vulcan's edict was absolute, his advance pitiless. Even when confronted by the human refugees caught between the hammer and anvil of the war, he didn't relent. All he saw were pale echoes of the noble people of his own beloved world, the hardships of the jungle dwellers as nothing compared to the harsh plight of Nocturne. In his darker moments, he wondered if he actually despised these sorry humans for allowing themselves to be conquered, and wondered if his supposed compassion had evaporated. As the land burned and the sky choked with smoke, he acknowledged it was the presence of the aliens that had affected his mood. That, and the remembrances of their ravages from his old life before the starships had come. War was unmaking. It went against everything his old father had taught him in the forge. Vulcan valued craft, the sense of transition beforehand and permanence afterwards. It brought quietude to his troubled and lonely soul. His true father, he who had crafted Vulcan to be a general, needed a warrior, not a black smiter. A warrior was what Vulcan would be. Standing on a vast ridge that jutted clear of the jungle expanse, Vulcan took consolation from the fact that with the destruction of the node, the need to linger on 1544 would pass, and he could put thoughts of his homeworld behind him more easily. Ibsen, that was its name. If it had a name and not a number, it had a heart. Did that also mean it was worth saving? Vulcan pushed the question aside as if it were a piece of clinker from the furnace. Though he was surrounded by his pyre guard and the two Legion companies looking down on the unfolding battle, Vulcan was very much alone in his troubled mind. Numion spoke up, interrupting the Primarch's thoughts.
They breach the outer threshold of the alien's domain. I expected a more concerted defense, I must admit.
Several of the pyre guard muttered in agreement. Varun nodded, the servo grinding of his armor joints articulating his response. There were other salamanders' captains nearby, and they too felt as the pyre guard did. Either the Eldar were a spent force, or they were holding out for another reason. Pensively, Vulcan watched. Unlike the ambush in the jungle, here the aliens were arrayed in number. Beneath their verdant cloaks that blended with the foliage around them, they carried fierce repeating bowcasters and long rifles. Vulcan watched as a Discipline Master was shot through the eye and a reddish plume of brain matter vacated the back of his skull. Another quickly took his place, and the Farian's heavy-handed push continued. The Eldar used heavy weapon batteries too, more maneuverable than those employed by the army cohorts on account of their anti-gravity platforms. Stuttering las beams and incandescent plasma bursts reduced the men rushing from the jungle fringes into a grimy red paste. Two-man rapier turrets and tracked tarantula guns replied with a harsh staccato of solid shells as the heavy weapons exchange continued. The overseers and discipline masters had formed the feral Farians into their army cohorts. Thick blocks of muscular and tattooed men advanced in formation, scatter locks and autocarbines tearing up the gloom with their combined muzzle flare. On the opposite side, crouched behind clumps of ruined alabaster, the Eldar unleashed an equally fierce response, and the air was stitched with further las beams and solid shot. Bodies fell on both sides, spun by heavy impacts, or simply dropped by kill shots, only to be crushed underfoot by the troops behind them, and the death rate increased as the firing lines closed. A temple surrounded the menhir. It was an aberrant thing, engraved with alien sigils that mimicked the one Ferus Manus had shown Vulcan via the hololith. The desert node was the only one the Imperium had managed to get a look at before their augurs were permanently disabled. But this one varied slightly. The runic elements on the flat sides of the menhir were in different configurations. It was language in some form. With time and proximity to the sigils, a dedicated study would unlock its secrets. Vulcan harbored no such desires. He only wanted to destroy it. He turned to Numion. When the army cohorts are fully engaged and the bulk of the Eldar drawn off, be ready to launch our assault on the node. If we attack decisively and quickly, we can destroy it before too many lives are surrendered to the meat grinder. Numion's voice was gravelly through his battle helm.
You think the aliens will lose heart once we've brought down their obelisk?
The only reason they're here, and not withdrawing to the forest where they can employ their preferred tactics, is to defend it. That motivation ends with the destruction of the node. Our opportunity is close. We must just be patient. Vulcan's eyes scanned the outer defences. The temple walls were ceremonial, not designed to withstand any form of concerted attack, and certainly not one from the Emperor's Angels of Death. He perceived rookeries in the upper towers, partially occluded where the jungle canopy had encroached upon them. Pterosaur riders lurked there in arboreal nests, waiting for the Legiones Astartes to engage. Hidden in the penumbral dark of the forest, he also detected mounted raptor beasts. The Eldar were keeping their assault troops in reserve. He didn't doubt that they would encounter more witch-psychers too. It was imperative that they neutralize the objective swiftly before the enemy could channel the node's power. The first ranks of the army had gained the outer temple defenses and were fighting hand to hand. Farians were brutish men who fought like savages against the Eldar's graceful lethality. Even so, the army grunts had numbers, and skill was worth little pitched against such odds. An Eldar, wearing a mottled green cloak, shot a man at close range, punching his heart muscle through his back and spine. Switching from his rifle, he drew a blade on another that flashed like quicksilver and released a crimson spray from the Farian's throat. Three of his comrades ganged up on the alien, and he was borne down beneath the weighted butts of their autocarbines. Others died equally grimly, stamped to mulch by army-issue boots, beheaded by alien monowire, gutted on bayonets, or slashed apart by falchions. Farians moved in packs, shoulder to shoulder, where the Eldar roved as solitary killers, finding partners briefly before breaking apart again to seek fresh enemies. It was almost primitive in its brutality. The bloody tableau unfolding on the battlefield washed over Vulcan. Overwhelming force was not drawing the Eldar into a full attack as he'd hoped. But as he regarded the melee dispassionately, he did see the slightest thinning in the aliens' defences as they began to stretch.
"They are holding back until we are fully committed," said Numion, as if reading his Primarch's thoughts.
The equerry had just noticed the secreted Saurian troops in the lofty arbours and foliage around the temple. Vulcan's fiery gaze narrowed to ember-like slits.
Then let's give them some encouragement. Release the 5th and 14th companies, the Fireborn.
Hecaton was not a prideful captain. The ambush in the jungle had cost the 14th more legionary blood than he was comfortable with, but he was pragmatic like all salamanders, and knew this was simply war. Losing Sergeant Bannon was a bitter blow. He had fought alongside Bannon for over a century, and the Flamer Division was virtually destroyed by the charge of the Carnadons. It had been split and redistributed around the other squads. It seemed strange to have specialists scattered around the 14th, but Hecaton couldn't deny the tactical flexibility it offered. His fellow captain of the 5th, Gravius, had sustained losses in his company too. Like Hecaton, he was humble and understood his place in the war. Even so, when the Primarch's order came down from the ridge, Hecaton clenched his fist in anticipation of some vengeance. He knew that Gravius would be doing the same. Crouched at the edge of the battling army cohorts, Hecaton turned to Kaitar.
"The anvil calls us, brother. Lord Vulcan would see our wounded self-esteem restored in the tempering flame of the forge."
Kaitar nodded as he racked the slide on his bolter. On his shoulder guard, he'd inscribed the names of Oranor and Atian in black ash.
"This shall be their requiem."
"For all the absent dead," Luminor added, crouched at the captain's opposite side, his white apothecary's plate stained with legion blood. Hecaton's command squad was gathered about him. All were humble, self-abnegating warriors, but like their captain, they welcomed the opportunity to avenge the fallen.
"Into the fires of war," Hecaton promised, then raised Gravius on the comm feed.
"The 5th are readying as we speak," the other captain uttered. "I will take them into the enemy's flank. We move on your order, brother captain."
"Then consider it given, Gravius. Glory to Vulcan,"
Hecaton replied.
Kaitar turned and roared to the others, signaling for the forward squads to march. "Glory to the Primarch and the Legion!"
More than 200 voices replied as one.
"Fireborn!"
Flamers, broken up amongst the divisions, came forward in the ranks to lay down a curtain of fire before the advancing 14th. Hecaton led them slowly at first, cutting down the Eldar with methodical bolter bursts. He'd kept his big guns in reserve, and as the Eldar drew off some of their forces to counter the threat, the captain gave the order for them to shoot. Missile contrails clouded the air, and thick conversion beams hummed powerfully as sergeants unleashed the might of their heavy divisions. To counter the barrage, the Eldar released their pterosaurs, and the winged reptilians dived towards the bigger guns at the back of Hecaton's formation. Heavy bolters struck up next, and the air was filled with their blistering shells. Flung javelins fell in a piercing torrent, but most were destroyed before they struck legionary bodies. Flying saurians were chewed apart by the fusillade, but more were descending from their rookeries. The sergeants of the forward squads kept them moving, firing from the hip. A massive squadron of raptors appeared on the flank, their riders brandishing power lances and spitting curses at the Emperor's warrior angels. Dreadnoughts lumbered forwards to intercept them. Atian had been alone when he fought and was killed by the Carnadon, but now an entire unit of the armored monsters was coming at the raptors.
"Disrupt their flank attacks, venerable brothers, and break up the aerial sweeps from their flyers."
Hecaton's voice rang down the feed.
"In Vulcan's name,"
they responded together as they clashed with the Eldar riders. The distance to the temple was closing. Hecaton revved up his chain blade, whispering an oath. His command squad were locked in beside him. He opened the feed again.
"Heavy divisions withdraw into the forest. Captain Gravius, we are about to engage." The reply came swift and eager.
We are the hammer, Captain Hecaton. Become the anvil, and let's see them broken.
It shall be done,
Hecaton promised. The hellish kaleidoscope of close combat was almost upon them.
Salamanders, bring them down!
From the summit of the ridge, Vulcan watched the 5th and 14th Companies attack. It prompted a flood of Eldar to uncloak and join the battle. In a matter of moments, the defenders of the psychic node had swelled with foot soldiers and Saurian riders.
They've drawn out the Eldar reserves, said Numion.
The eagerness for combat in his voice was obvious and spread to the rest of the pyre guard. Atenarius gripped the haft of his double-bladed power sword as if strangling an enemy. Gan's gauntlets cracked noisily as he clenched and unclenched his fists. Leodrak and Skatarvar swung their power mauls off their shoulder guards and into ready positions in unison. Only Igataron was still, but then raw aggression bled off him in waves anyway. Vulcan felt it too, but coaxed the embers of his belligerence a little longer before choosing to release it. Numion crouched near the edge of the ridge, the pommel of his halberd staved into the ground to support him.
I see none of the larger beasts among their number.
There were none. Vulcan had found no evidence of Carnadons hidden in the jungle depths.
Apparently they are wary of our strength.
Numion stood up again. Varun was behind him, sharpening the edge of his gladius, but did not offer a hand to the equerry. No warrior of the Pyre Guard would ever insult another by doing such a thing.
You mean your strength, my lord?
My strength is our strength, Numion. We are one, the Legion and I.
Despite his inner feelings of estrangement, this much Vulcan knew was true. Save perhaps Horus, who had his Mournival, all of the Primarchs trod a solitary path. It was simply that the Primarch of the Salamanders felt it more acutely than his brothers. He was surveying the battlefield intently when his expression changed from one of aloof detachment to satisfied vindication. A Carda of Eldar had emerged into the open.
I've been waiting for you.
When he spoke, his deep voice was full of threat, presaging violence.
Now we strike.
Numion turned to the others, brandishing his halberd like a rallying standard.
Pyre Guard, embark!
Supported by its landing stanchions on a patch of scorched earth behind them was a stormbird, its idling engines quickly built to loft speed. And the vessel took off just as Vulcan and his inner circle warriors got aboard. The other companies on the ridge would stay in reserve and could only watch as their lord took off. The embarkation ramp was still closing when Numion voxed the pilot from the hold.
Lock assault vector on the node. Missile batteries and...
Vulcan stopped him.
No, we do this hand to hand. Put us down at the edge of the node. I want to crack that thing with my hammer personally.
Jamming his chain sword into the Eldar's guts, Hecaton bellowed for his warriors to drive on.
Advance, 14th. Vulcan is watching you.
Vulcan is always watching. As the anvil tempers us, so too does the Primarch.
A welter of gore erupted from the corpse as he tore the blade free, and he was quickly pressed into defending against another attack. An Eldar with an ornate sword struck at his guard. Sparks flared from the clashing weapons as Legiones Astartes' aggression met alien finesse. But Hecaton's blood was up, and he dispatched his foe with a close-range burst from his bolt pistol. Scorch marks blighted the forest green of his vambrace, occluding the lines of arterial blood staining much of his armor. It was war's baptism, and he embraced it with a shout of triumph as he sought out another foe.
This was where he wanted to be, in the thick of battle, eye to eye with the enemy and taking Eldar heads.
Hecaton originated from Nocturne. He knew the terror of the slave raids. He had lived through them as a boy. Though his apotheosis had altered his memory of those torments, the intrinsic enmity remained. These were not like the slavers. Their anima was different. But they were of the Eldar caste, so Hecaton's contempt felt justified. A spit of flame spewed to his right flank, warming his pauldron, and burning up a clutch of Eldar snipers intent on evening the odds. He didn't slow. Momentum was everything. It was as inexorable, methodical, and exacting as an avalanche. Gravius was fully committed, too. Hecaton had heard the shouts of the valiant fifth as they'd closed for the kill. In truth, the near defeat in the jungle had wounded them both. The chance to excise those feelings in the fires of war was the greatest boon his Primarch could have granted them. "Hammer and anvil, brothers," the words resounded in his mind. "Let us show them that the salamanders are not easily bowed." The melee was intense, a sweeping chaos of bloody images. Burning alien flesh was redolent on the breeze, mixed with the stale aroma of their reptilian mounts. Grunting and baying, they were finding the Legion a tougher foe to overwhelm without their massive Carnadon cousins or the intervention of their witches. Until a lightning storm erupted around the psychic node, and four enrobed figures stepped forth. Hecaton was close enough to see it happen through the press of warring bodies. It was as if they'd been carried on the lightning itself, invisible passengers riding the eldritch energy, and merely let go of its arc. They embarked to set foot on the earth as any man would step from a ship. Bolts of verdant green still coursed over the arcane sigils, covering the psyker's trappings in the wake of teleportation. As three witches stood sentinel around the node, a fourth came forwards. Though the Eldar were an androgynous race, Hecaton could tell that this one was male. He wore no helm, but sported an array of sigilic tattoos upon his pale and imperious face. His long hair was swept back, tied up with a runic clasp that ran around his temples in two half-hemispheres that each terminated with a ruby-like gemstone at his forehead. It had the effect of a crown, and once again the salamander was struck by the sheer decadence and arrogance of the aliens. Unlike the others, he wore viridian robes shot through with cerulean blue. He parted the ensemble to draw forth a glittering rune sword of unimaginable beauty. The weapon was psychically linked to its bearer, and the blade crackled actinically as witchfire filled the Eldar's eyes. A growing void expanded slowly around him as the other aliens backed away. Hecaton soon found himself with clear ground between him and the warlock. Kaitar, Luminor, and the rest of the command squad were in sync with their sergeant's orders before they were even given.
"In Vulcan's name, kill that thing!"
They charged together. The warlock watched them come, his blade held in a swordsman's guard position. He wore the leggings and tunic of a warrior ascetic, festooned with runic iconography and arcana. Moments before the clash, he tipped his head in what might have been a salute. Hecaton's first blow cut air and fouled in the ground, churning earth as the warlock weaved aside. Kaitar fared better, but his gladius was repelled by the flat of the Eldar's sword. Luminor snapped off a half clip from his bolt pistol, but the shells detonated harmlessly from a kine shield, impelled by the warlock's open palm. A blast of force put the apothecary on his back, and Brother Tuvar threw himself in the way of the Eldar's sword to save him from the subsequent sword strike. The runic blade penetrated the salamander's guard easily, snapping Tuvar's gladius, cleaving into his armor and sinking up to the hilt in his chest. Tearing the blade free, the warlock spun to cut open Angvenon's plastron and fed a jag of lightning into the blow, spinning the salamander and launching him off his feet. Battle plates smoking, Angvenon tried to rise but fell onto his front and stayed down.
"Break him!"
snarled Hecatan, taking another swing. His world had condensed to this one fight, the rest of the battle a dim and bloody blur around him. This was the anvil, he realized, the moment when he would overcome and rise, or capitulate and fall. It was like three warrior knights fighting a dancer as the Eldar dodged their clumsy blows whilst attacking with rapid thrusts of his rune sword. Hecatan refused to give in.
"I am legion. I am a warrior born."
The warlock had reduced three of the Emperor's angels to oafs wielding lumps of noisy metal, and that rankled Hecatan. He swung again, but cut at shadows. Bringing up his pistol, he pulled the trigger, but was hit by a barrage of lightning from the warlock's clenched fist. Warning icons sprang into life instantly across the captain's retinal display. Pain suppressors went to work in the same biomechanical reaction, keeping him on his feet. The bolt pistol was overloaded and exploded in his fist, showering Hecatan with hot shrapnel. He was only dimly aware of the spasms jolting his muscles, but knew he was injured when his vision started clouding.
"Fireborn!"
It was as much a yell of defiance as it was a cry for reinforcement to the others. Kaitar and Luminor closed in, robbing the warlock of a killing blow. The view was narrowing, made worse by his battle helm, so Hecatan tore at the release clamps to discard it. It clattered to the ground, and the smells, sights, and sounds of the alien jungle staggered him, before his genhanced senses could compensate. He still carried his chain sword, buzzing belligerently in his hand. One of Bannon's ex-flamer division appeared in Hecatan's peripheral vision, and he shouted to him above the din.
"Legionary, hell and flame!"
A swathe of burning promethium swept over the combatants. Kaitar fell, buffeted by the blast and on fire, while Luminor shielded himself with his forearm. The warlock thwarted the flame storm with a flaring kine shield, but as he threw up one defense, he lowered another. Hecatan leapt through the blaze with his chainsword in a two-handed grip and brought it down savagely as he landed. A feeble, choking sound emanated from the Eldar's gullet as he swallowed a meter of churning blade. All the wards and sigils protecting the alien were broken, his preternatural swiftness undone in a single brutal moment. He glared at Hecatan, who glared back, his eyes alive with a vengeful crimson glow. Pain should have slowed him, taken him out of the fight, but the sons of Vulcan were tenacious, just as their father had taught them to be. He came in close, teeth locked together in half grimace and half snarl.
"Salamanders, fight as one!"
A gobbet of acid spit seared the ashen cheek of the Eldar as Hecatan visited a final insult upon him before the light in the alien's eyes dimmed and he died. Wrenching his blade from the corpse, Hecatan prepared to fight on. Ahead of the salamanders was the node, but the warlock had bought the others in his coven enough time to tap into its power. A coruscation of energy was rippling between the three witches as if the stone was feeding and enhancing their abilities. Hecatan had time to lift his chain blade in a rallying gesture before a lightning whip struck out from the node. The Elder Coven channeled it, a bending, crackling bolt of energy that ripped dreadnoughts off their feet and flattened salamanders. It swept across the legion in a wave, leaving electrified and scorched battle plate behind it. The Eldar, still engaged in the melee, were struck too. The shimmering beam was undiscriminating, and Hecatan realized then just what they were willing to sacrifice to protect the node. Mercifully, he and his command squad had been spared from the first bolt, but a second was already building. Unleashed in a matter of seconds, the bolt would easily outstrip him for pace. It hurt like hellfire, but still Hecaton ran with all the fading strength in his body. Engines screaming, the storm bird drew closer to the lightning storm. A flash lit the darkened interior of the hold, revealing the forbidding form of Vulcan standing by the open side hatch. It was drawn as wide as it would go, and the wind whipped within the gunship, buffeting the oaths of moment pinned to the warrior's armor. Vulcan was stooped, eyes narrowed as he focused on the node. Its pointed tip was the focal point for the storm, and the runes along its surface glowed in sympathetic union with the lightning. Even from above and at distance, it was monolithic. Destroying it would not be easy. The grip Vulcan had around his hammer's haft tightened. Behind him, the pyre guard waited with barely fettered aggression. "Unleash us!" The Primarch could sense what they desired as surely as he felt it in his own blood. A crack of lightning surged past the side of the ship, clipping one of its wings, and the hold shuddered and pitched. Smoke trailed from the wound in the armor plate. It wasn't serious enough for the Stormbird to withdraw, but they'd come about as far as they could without risking a crash. Vulcan didn't even reach for a handhold. His body was utterly still, his intensity unbroken. Slowly, the pilot brought them back on course, and the node loomed again, several kilometers below, and wreathed with crackling power. The Witch Coven at its foundation was ready to siphon its energy into another bolt. The devastation wrought by the first must have been egregious to witness on the ground, and from above, its destructive trail was all too plain to see. It seemed strange for the Eldar to protect the edifice with such vehemence when their tactics suggested an entirely different method of warfare. Here, by holding on to the obelisk, they exposed all of their weakness and mitigated their strengths. The suspicion of something unseen and unknown entered the Primarch's mind, but for now he could not affect it, whatever it was. Instead, he concentrated on the thing he could do something about. Vulcan crouched a little lower and waited until the Stormbird banked so the hatch was angled down towards the node. The hammer he bore was a weapon of his own creation. Thunderhead was its name. He'd fashioned it on Nocturne in honor of N'Bel and his heritage. Captured storms thrashed within its ornate head, beaten into the metal through many long hours of toil in the forge. There was no other like it. No legionary could wield it, no man could even lift it. Vulcan alone possessed the strength and mastery to bend it to his will. He donned his drake helm and it maglocked to his gorget.
"Do you know what comes after lightning, brothers?"
The pyre guard did not answer. Instead, they readied their weapons. Vulcan's eyes flashed with inner fire.
"Thunder!"
He leapt from the hold.